vitamins and minerals that you won't find in Nesquik powder.
Mom, we're back!
Who wants Ovaltine?
We do!
We better make more.
More Ovaltine, please!
The views expressed on Inside Scoop do not necessarily reflect those of the station owner, management, or staff of WAGE.
Good evening, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. And certainly this government has fought Americans from knowing what really happened before 9/11, before the worst terrorist attack on American soil. George Bush opposed the 9/11 Commission, and it was only after really strong opposition by family members of the victims and other Americans that Bush flip-flopped and managed to allow the commission to occur, to support the bill in Congress, mainly because he didn't want to veto it. But he fought everything. He fought giving documents to the 9/11 Commission. He did not want his National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, to testify. And he himself originally refused to testify before the 9/11 Commission and finally agreed to appear before, but only with Vice President Dick Cheney by his side. And it wouldn't be testimony, it wouldn't be under oath, it wouldn't be recorded for posterity. Some would think George W. Bush has something to hide. On this program, we have had many guests that have thought that. We have had victims of September 11th, their family members, talk on air on what they think George Bush has to hide. We had Sybil Edmonds. She, of course, was the translator for the FBI that discovered that Condoleezza Rice was lying to the American people when she said they had no idea, no suggestion that someone could fly planes into American buildings. She also helped describe a spy in the FBI. So we've certainly addressed this question before, and we've addressed the issue of whether George Bush was incompetent in failing to recognize all the warning signs, in failing to have an FBI translate documents that would have shown an attack on September 11th, in failing to have George Tenet recognize that Zacharias Moussaoui, who Tenet admits he knew well, was somebody trying to fly planes and not really wanting to land them. Someone who George Tenet, the seconds after the attack, realized it was connected to Moussaoui. Maybe he told Bush. Maybe Bush had some knowledge about it. We do know, of course, of the memo given to George Bush, bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States, and, of course, many, many warnings in the so-called summer of threat that Richard Clark, the terrorism czar, has talked about. Now, in this program, we have brought up Bush's incompetence in failing to recognize the signals, and we've certainly condemned Bush for using 9/11 politically. After 9/11, using it as a campaign slogan, as a political ploy, to divide us rather than unite us, and to try to help his campaign. And that's so far where I've let it lie. I've called the president incompetent for failing to recognize the signals, and I've condemned his use of 9/11 afterwards. Some, however, would go further, including some of my listeners, have said that they think it's more than that. They think that perhaps the President of the United States intentionally failed to stop September 11th. I haven't been yet convinced of that, but I do want to leave it open to question. I want to explore that issue. And in fact, my guest today is Jimmy Walter. He's a businessman who spent more than $1.5 million arguing exactly this point, launching advertising blitzes in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek, all magazines across the country, $1.5 million to argue, in effect, that September 11th may not have been as much of an accident as some of us would think. It may be more than Bush's incompetence. In fact, he's even sponsored something called the Omission Commission in Manhattan and has done so really for a couple years now, ever since he's noticed that the Bush administration has been lying to the American public. And we're going to get to him in just a few minutes and get your chance to ask him questions and to really explore this issue in some detail. And I also, later on in the broadcast, want to give you more of an inside scoop on what's been going on all week. We know about the debates. We know that Kerry cleaned Bush's clock. We know, in fact, as you heard on CNN News, that the polls now show the race tied again. Of course, I've been arguing for weeks that Bush has never been as high as some of the polls have suggested. So If you want to talk about the debate, we talked about it on Friday, bring it on. It's always fun to talk about it, particularly as this may well be the moment, remembered in history, when Kerry turned the race around and started to pull ahead. But I do want to give you some brief inside scoops, again later on in the hour, as to what's going on in Washington, because I'm going to be away next week. I apologize in advance. I know how much you folks miss me, but I'm going to be away Monday through Friday. I'm going to be in San Diego attending the National Broadcasters Convention. And so I won't be able to deal with a lot of the issues that came up last week that I would have dealt with if we had the normal weekly broadcast. So I just want to quickly label them out to you, throw them out to you, and if that's what you want to talk about, we can talk about those too. There is George Bush wanting to legalize torture. Now, he's already put in executive order, and certainly the United States has had a long practice of taking suspects and sending them to foreign countries to torture them for us. Bush has done it illegally. Now he wants to make it legal. We also have in Congress, they put off all the funding. They don't want to pass a budget. They don't believe in balanced budgets anymore. They're going to put it all off until November 20th, until after the election, so no one sees the huge deficit, the huge hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent that we don't have, the huge money going to Halliburton. Instead, they focused last week on the federal marriage amendment, basically attacking gay people. There's Bush flip-flops on the oil stockpile. There's the fact that he's cutting $1.1 billion in health care to children, the S-CHIP program, which is actually something that Kerry helped set up. And then, of course, there are Republican ads, including the ones in Arkansas and West Virginia, two swing states that are fairly conservative in religious outlook, arguing that the Democrats, and John Kerry in particular, want to ban Bibles. And the Republican Party is actually making this argument. Pretty extreme stuff. And again, the smear campaign is not getting a lot of mainstream press. There is new information that Bush released just on the eve of the debate, his exit letter from the National Guard, arguing that he didn't have to comply with the requirements, he just didn't have time to do it, and also more information that, in fact, Bush was actually too drunk to fly. And then we have some good news. We have a court striking down a major part of the Patriot Act, the part that lets the government spy on you on the Internet without judicial review. And we can talk about the ACLU's lawsuit, which they've been required to keep secret up to now. And I want to talk about all those things later on in the hour. One last thing before I get to our guest today, Jimmy Walter, and that is that tomorrow, Monday, is the last day in many, many states to register to vote. Now, I know everyone listening to my broadcast who is a citizen is already registered to vote. I know that. My listeners are people who are organized and intelligent, and they're already registered. But let me give you a friendly warning. If you have moved since you voted last, they may not have it right. Please double check. Please triple check. This election is too important. Go on the Internet. Look up your state registrar. Just Google in registrar of elections, your state, and call that registrar. If there's any doubt in your mind, maybe they changed precinct lines, maybe they've done a redistricting thing, you call, you make sure that you're registered, that you can vote on November 2nd, that everything is just hunky-dory. Because I'll tell you this, the Republicans are going to be pulling out all stops on November 2nd, looking for all loopholes to try to prevent you from having your right to vote. So if there's any question whatsoever about your registration, if there has been any movement, you know, people move around a lot in America, if you've changed your address, moved one street over since your last election, please, better be safe than sorry. Call the registrar tomorrow. Take the time. It'll only take a phone call now. You won't be able to reach your registrar on election day when they're telling you you can't vote. Please, please, don't forget to double-check your registration. Now let me get to the guest. His name, as I said, is Jimmy Walter. He spent more than $1.5 million on trying to figure out what the government hasn't told us about September 11th. In fact, he even sponsored a whole commission separate from the 9/11 commission, which he calls the Omission Commission. And he's really, you know, put his money where his mouth is. He wants to find out how much the Bush administration knew in advance about attacks on the United States. And if you want to call in and you want to question him, here's your chance. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Or you can do as many of you like to do, I know, and comment on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com and put whatever comment you like on the blog, and we'll be reading them on air. But first, let me introduce to you my guest, Jimmy Walter. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me today.
Well, let me ask you just as I said, on this program, we have talked often about Bush's incompetence. We've talked often about how he's used 9/11 for political gain. But you, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you would go further and suggest that it's not just incompetence. Is that right?
Well, I have to say this. When we get to exactly who, we're guessing. Now, here's the one thing about Bush himself that, in my opinion, is positive for him, and that is, if I had been in on it, I wouldn't have sat looking like a doofus in that classroom for so long. I'd been up looking presidential, as they say.
Yeah, so that's an argument that, in fact, he's merely, and again, merely is an interesting word to use here, but merely an incompetent president and not a malicious president.
But on the other side, I believe that there are definitely people within his administration and within the United States military that are guilty of treason.
Okay. Well, let's go through the various facts that you raise and others have raised. And I should tell you that many of my listeners, in fact, have support your theory. In fact, Dave in California sent me a comment about a book called Inside Job by Jim Mars, Unmasking 9/11 Conspiracy, that seems to be right up your alley. Tell me, who do you think is guilty of treason? What have they done?
Well, you see, I can't tell you that. I can only tell you for sure that it could only have been an inside job. They couldn't have done it. If you read Mike Rupert's book, if you read Inside Job, if you read New Pearl Harbor by David Ray Griffin and these, they talk to you about the NORAD situation, and there's no way that could have happened without somebody screwing with it.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's talk about the NORAD situation, because there are a number of different things that you raised, Jimmy. Let's talk about it in some detail. NORAD, of course, is the North American Air Defense. It's I believe it's up in Canada, isn't it? Or is it in the United
States? Well, it's a general term for the entire defense of North America.
Okay.
It even encompasses South America, people coming from the south, but because of the Russians, it's heaviest in the north. That is absolutely correct.
Now, the complaint is that when we knew that three and then four flights were hijacked, they could have been shot down in time if the order had been given in time prior to the planes hitting the World Trade Center and hitting the Pentagon. Is that right?
Your net bottom line is correct, but to be more precise, that year, I believe it was something like 160 times F-16s were scrambled and met passenger planes that had either veered off course, had changed their transponder code, or failed to respond verbally to ATC within 15 minutes. That an F-16 climbs to altitude in 2.5 minutes. Yet on that day, four times they failed to get a plane within an hour, and one of them within 2 hours and an hour after they knew that it was hijacked and probably heading for Washington.
Now, what about the argument that some say that, well, the president hesitated to shoot down passenger planes, and then so...
Not necessary for the president to approve this. Contrary to the disinformation that Cheney is spreading, under current NORAD regulations, a pilot without any approval who sees an aircraft about to strike a major target in the United States on his own authority can shoot down the plane. At most, if that image train danger is not imminent, his commander can tell him to shoot down the plane. If they have all the time in the world, which they never do, they'll probably try to find the president. But the fact of the matter is the current regulations, which are clearly outlined in David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, and in Eric Huffman's book, Painful Questions, shows that they didn't need anybody's permission. Those planes should have been shot down. But what Rupert and Alex Jones and others have shown is the reason why is not that they were ordered to stand down, but that there were two war games being conducted. And the man in charge was none other than our Vice President, Dick Cheney.
The man in charge of NORAD?
No, these particular war games, he was in the Presidential Command Center, and they were chasing, guess what, 23 imaginary hijacked airplanes.
Okay, so there was actually a game, if you will, a military game, a strategy.
Or a diversion, if you will.
And this occurred before September 11th.
On September 11th. That's why they never got to the planes. They couldn't find them. They had all these fake hijacked airplanes on their radar screen, and they only apparently have 8 pairs of F-16 to do the whole Northeast United States.
Now, this is really interesting. I frankly haven't heard this before, and that's what we like to do is give inside information to our listeners. You're saying that there was a military game scheduled on the day of September 11th to simulate... It was scheduled and it took place on September 11th to simulate hijackings.
Correct. 20 plus.
And where is your source for that?
Well, Mike Rupert and Alex Jones both have, Mike Rupert has it in his book, I believe, that I know Alex Jones has it in one of his videos, and they get it from apparently Department of Defense records. But I can certainly send you the absolute source. As we say this, I'll be looking for it.
Well, okay, and actually we have to go to commercial break, so it'll give you a chance. The other thing you can do, Mr. Walter, after the broadcast is you can add it to the blog if there's an Internet link, and then all my listeners, many of them follow the blog, they can take a look at it there.
Mike Rupert's book is fresh out. He's got to be all over his website, From the Wilderness or Out of the Wilderness. It's the idea being that he's a voice in the wilderness.
Okay, we got to go.
Mike Rupert, and you can do a Google search and find it, but I'll put it on the blog for sure, too.
We got to go to commercial break, but there's a lot of questions here. It's not just about NORAD. There's some that argue that the fire of jet fuel was not hot enough to make the World Trade Center collapse. And then there are the other things that we've mentioned on this show, but may take a different cast as you put everything together. The fact that the Saudis knew about the attacks, that they were spirited away on private jets right soon after the attacks when other private jets were grounded. And, of course, we all know how the 9/11 attacks have been used by the Bush administration to prop up a president who, right before September 11th, was down in the low 40s in the polls. Could this be a grand conspiracy? Are we all looking too much over our shoulders? What's going on here? If you want to call in, all you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can comment on the blog, as so many of you do. Go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with businessman Jimmy Walter right after this.
Here's a message about Anderson Windows from J.T. Hurst & Company, a division of T.W. Perry. If you're thinking about remodeling your home, keep in mind that windows play a big part, so it's important to get the right ones. Anderson not only offers finely crafted windows and patio doors in thousands of sizes and styles, they also give you natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and long-lasting energy-saving performance. Stop in and see the full line of Anderson Windows at J.T. Hurst & Company, a division of T.W. Perry. The pros at J.T. Hurst can locate a contractor to do the job for you or give you some helpful tips on how you can do it yourself. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first, a division of T.W. Perry. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, Anderson Windows. Long live the home.
How many different organizations list you as a member? You might be a member of a sports team, a book club, travel or CD club. But what does that membership really mean? Does membership in a book club allow you to vote on who runs the organization? Can you help shape the long-term future of your CD club? I don't think so. You can, however, shape the future of your electric company. That is, if you're a Novec customer. Novec, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, is owned by the consumers we serve and governed by a board of directors elected from the membership. Pretty cool, huh? But wait, there's more. Novec's customers share in the company's profits. Last year, we distributed more than $9.1 million in capital credits to our membership. The power to vote and a share of the profits. Membership doesn't get much better than this. Novec, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. Novec. I got the power to move ya.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And now we're discussing September 11th, what the president knew or should have known, and more importantly, what he is hiding from us. My guest is Jimmy Walter. He spent more than $1.5 million
trying to find out what everyone's hiding here, what's going on, what is being omitted. And in fact, he has an omission commission to check it out. It's not just 9/11. He's also spent money advertising when he saw that George Bush was lying about the Iraq crisis. So he's really, this is a guy who puts his money where his mouth is and tries to let people know. I got to tell you, Jimmy Walter, I myself certainly have complained about the way the press seems to be tilted to the right wing. All you have to do is look at talk radio, where you see that 90% is right wing, is people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And in fact, I left my job working as a congressional attorney precisely to bring everyone the inside scoop. So I think we're definitely fellow travelers in this regard. I do want to go on and ask you about another thing with regard to September 11th. And this is, comes from a question from Gordon on the blog. And Gordon asks, what about the fire temperature thing? I've never heard there being a point of contention about that. The heat of the fire was always portrayed in the press as being plenty hot to melt the building's superstructures. Is that true, Mr. Walter?
No. There was a curious Muslim headline about that. It says, Muslims change the laws of physics. That's the only way that that could have happened. First of all, the maximum temperature for jet fuel or any hydrocarbon in oxygen is 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when it is that hot, it emits a blue light. It's the blue little neat blue flame you see in your gas stove or gas heater. When it's not that blue, when it's yellow, it's a lower temperature. When it's smoking, it's a lower temperature. And so the building smoked heavily, but you could see no fires. In fact, there were live women and men coming to the gap where the plane had hit one of the buildings and standing in the opening. Firemen called from within the building and said the fires are not that bad, in fact, just few and small. They declared the structure safe, and firemen came up. Two, the fireball, according both to FEMA and the National Transportation Safety Board, but that's not exactly the right agency, but the one responsible, said that most of the fuel, their fuel was consumed in the fireball. But steel melts not at 1,800 degrees, but at 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And firemen and the wrecking crews reported seeing melted steel in the basement, a long, long way from where the fires were on about the 90th floor.
Well, Mr. Walter, first of all, I want to make sure everyone hears you. There's a little bit of muffling going on. I don't know if there's papers rustling or whatever, but
okay.
I do want to make sure everyone hears you because you're raising some very interesting points. Your argument is that the jet fuel alone, the September 11th attack, the flying the hijacked airplanes into the building, was not enough to cause the World Trade Center to fall. Is that correct?
The first building fell after being hit 56 minutes before, less than an hour. The Meridian Plaza in Philadelphia burned for 19 hours fiercely and never collapsed. The steel in the basement of the World Trade Towers was very thick. It was like 16 inches thick in a tube or something. Huge things. And they found it melted way down there. It would have taken hours to heat that much metal up that much unless you used explosives like C4.
Now, could it be that the World Trade Center was structured in such a way, and I am not a building expert, but was structured in such a way that the steel was more likely to collapse after burning than, say, the Meridian Building in Philadelphia?
Scientific American did a study on the World Trade Tower the year before and said they don't make them as tough as the World Trade Tower. All those trusses were interlocked in a staggered pattern, so they couldn't collapse together. The only way that they could have done that is with explosives. We've done time frame, stop frame of what happened, and we can see clearly that both buildings fall at the speed of gravity. That means that if you've been standing on the top of the building and dropped a steel ball, you and the steel ball would have hit the ground at the same time. Well, that's impossible. Even under the pancake theory, each time a floor hits another, it's going to slow down. It's not going to go free fall down. The only way that can happen is if the floors are being blown out ahead of them as they come down.
Well, I do have to say this. In looking, and I did watch, as so many Americans did, I did watch at least the first Trade Center fall to the ground, and I got out of my congressional office before the second one fell down because I feared that the Capitol might well be under attack. It did, as it fell, look very much like I've seen those hotels in Las Vegas when they have those controlled explosions and they fall down, they sort of implode internally. It didn't topple, it didn't fall over. It did sort of, you know, go down in that way, and I do remember that. Again, I'm not an expert, so I can't say the significance of that, but that may relate to your theory.
Well, if you look at it carefully, both buildings were hit off-center. Two sides of both buildings were untouched by impact, untouched by fire. There was no fires on the back side of the buildings. There's no way that those sides would have given way at exactly the same time that these sides gave way on the side where they hit.
Kind of like if you hit maybe a tree would be a good example. If you hit a tree, if you sit an axe to a tree on one side of it, the tree falls to that side because you weakened one side and not the other side.
Right, but these buildings fell straight down. Now, one of them started to lean, but then it went. It went straight down. If you look at them as they go straight down, you'll see. Well, back up a bit. The building had both an exoskeleton and an endoskeleton, a skeleton on the outside and a skeleton on the inside. The outside skeleton were steel beams coated in all this other stuff about 12 feet apart all around the edge of the building. When you see this thing go down, you see on all sides of the building these steel beams shooting away from the building, 70, 100 feet away from the building, because you can do scale it by how wide the building is itself, and going straight out. Now, that doesn't happen from a collapse. That only happens if explosives are blowing the thing away. And when you start studying these pictures in detail, you see that the administration's pancake theory doesn't hold water.
So do you believe that there were explosives set in the building, Mr. Walter?
The powdered concrete coming out of the windows at hundreds of miles an hour, that tree from sandwiched structures, they had taken a steel rim, put in a steel bottom, poured 4 inches or 6 inches of concrete, if it will give it, and then put a steel plate on top of that. And they're telling us that by collapsing, the concrete inside of those things was pulverized and shot out those windows. There's no way that can happen. The only way you could have pulverized that concrete is with explosives.
Well, let me ask you this. I got a listener here by the name of Dave. In fact, he's the guy that has one of the ones that very much recommended that someone like you come on the broadcast. He talks about building number 7 at the World Trade Center. Here's what Dave writes on the blog. He says, no, our White House crew is up to their necks in the event of 9/11. Orders had to come from on high for our fire jets to stand down and let it happen. A third plane was to hit building number 7. The passengers jumped the hijackers and recovered that plane, however, so it never got into crash into building 7, but number 7 came down anyway. No structural damage, but it still came down, and we hear so little about this building. My feeling, Dave, is I'm skeptical about that theory because the stuff that I've read suggests that they were really trying to go for, they were heading toward Washington, in fact, the plane in Philadelphia. They were trying to hit the Capitol or someplace like that. But let me ask our guest, Jimmy Walter, do you think that Building 7 is part of this perhaps controlled explosion, something like that?
Well, Building 7 was not hit by an airplane, not hit by anything significant falling on it, had no significant fires, and yet fell straight down from all corners at exactly 5:30, well, straight down, the exact time isn't important, but straight down, just like a controlled demolition. We have on tape Larry Silverstein saying that he and the fire department made the decision to pull it. Now, pull it is a term specific to the demolition industry, which means to set the charges off and pull the building down into the ground. And
So the number 7 building, the government has admitted then, was a controlled explosion to bring it down.
Not at all. FEMA, in its report, said we have no idea why Building 7 collapsed. Because you have to consider this, that to do a controlled demolition, you have to plant the charges and it takes 2 weeks to 2 months to do it. And if they do it right, they do tests. Here, they're trying to tell us that people were running through a building where the fires were so out of control that they were going to have to destroy the building, setting up charges, or this building was pre-wired. And if that building was pre-wired, why weren't the other buildings pre-wired?
Let me read you another question here from Skip. Skip writes, I thought I saw a memo on the Internet that required the dispatching of any jets to intercept airliners to be okayed by the Secretary of Defense. It was created right after Bush's coronation. They could be dispatched by local Air Force commanders before Bush. Is that true, Mr. Walter?
As I said earlier, the current NORAD regulations, and you can see that in Rupert's book, in David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, in Eric Huffman's book, Painful Question, specifies that the aircraft pilot can shoot down an airliner if he sees it attacking a thing of national importance.
Okay, so in other words, they have a right to shoot down an airliner.
Right, now if he has time, he's going to call up to his boss to cover his rear.
But if he caught up
with it a minute before he hit the World Trade Towers and saw it going in, he could shoot it down.
Okay, I want to go to the phones now. If you want to dial in, all you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can do as so many of you already have done and comment on the blog by going to www.radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Jimmy Walter.
This is Ed from New York.
Yes, Ed.
Would you tell Mr. Walters, first of all, that I really have enjoyed listening to his thesis, and that's always the best part about your show is I get to listen to new and different things that I don't hear about all the time. But ask Mr. Walter this particular question for me, if you would. Where does all this lead? I think his evidence may be a great deal of convincing, but what does he really think happened? What's his conclusion?
Fair question, Mr. Walter.
Well, it isn't exactly a fair question because it requires me to guess, and I don't have the best evidence.
That's true. You have to speculate on motivations.
Well, I can come up with lots of motivation. I come up with lots of circumstantial evidence, but they don't release all the films and the tapes, for instance, of the Pentagon. They refused to reveal, and they confiscated other people's tapes and refused to return or release them. And all of this stuff, they've shut up. FBI agents can't publish stuff. So there's a lot of smoke here, but to force me to connect all the dots it is not really fair. Now, if you want me to speculate, we can go to the Woodard and Bernstein theorem, follow the power or the money. When money is just power, so follow the power. And we see that members of the United States Defense Department, the Defense Department as a whole, had its budget up. They have risen in status. They became heroes. We see that the neocons have a U.S. military presence in the middle of the Persian Gulf and sitting on top of the world's second largest oil supply, the remaining oil supply. We see that Bechtel and Halliburton and et al. Are getting these great lucrative no-bid contracts and cheating like hell on them. We see that George W. Bush has a whole world doing the goose step and saying how great he is. I can't say who did it. Oh, and Israel gets their number two enemy taken out, and the United States now sits between them and their number one enemy. So there's a whole lot of groups here that benefited, and there's no telling if one did it, a combination of them did it, or somebody I don't even know about who just wants to screw things up for us all, but somebody bigger, badder, and better than 19 screw-ups with box cutters defeated the United States government that day.
Well, it's an interesting theory, and we are exploring it. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop, and also my Inside Scoops on what's been going on in Congress, in the White House, in Washington the last week when everyone's focused on the debate. And, hey, if you want to call in and talk about the debate, that's a welcome subject, too. All you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP or contribute to the blog. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
communication, anytime, anywhere, with edanywhere.com. EdAnywhere.com provides a middle and high school curriculum that is delivered 24/7 on the Internet for self-paced, independent study. Students and school systems nationwide have been enrolled with a success rate in excess of 85%. It has also been shown to be highly effective for use in alternative school programs, such as summer school, credit recovery, tutorial and remediation, special education, GED, and state standardized test preparation, homebound and homeschool. Earn an accredited high school diploma online. Fully approved, convenient, affordable, and self-paced. Register for classes or set up an appointment or consultation by calling 703-433-0805 or by visiting our website at www.edanywhere.com. Education, anytime, anywhere, with edanywhere.com. Committed to leaving no student behind. America's best-dressed sandwich can be summed up by one word, Blimpy. And a mouth-watering, overstuffed Blimpy sub is just around the corner at Blimpy's on Catoctin Circle at the Amoco Station in Leesburg, also next to the Government Center in Leesburg and on Sterling Boulevard. Stop by soon and try some delicious new wraps, including the Southwestern with turkey, bacon and guacamole, the barbecue wrap, chicken Caesar, zesty Italian, beef and cheddar wrap, or the ultimate BLT wrap with capicola, cheddar and bacon. What makes a Blimpy sub so delicious? Start with a fresh-baked sub roll, now available in your choice of honey wheat, sesame seed, poppy seed, zesty Parmesan, white, and wheat. Stack it high with fresh meats and cheeses fixed to order, with lettuce, tomatoes, pickles, peppers, and all your favorites. Plus, you'll get a dollar off any 12-inch sub after 4 p.m. Offer good 7 days a week at all three Blimpy's locations. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, next to the Government Center in Leesburg, and on Sterling Boulevard. Blimpy's also has great employment opportunities.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former Congressional Attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. My guest is Jimmy Walter, a businessman who spent $1.5 million arguing that it's more than Bush incompetence on 9/11, that there are some unanswered questions here that really are strange. Things like possible controlled explosions, possible, you know, NORAD not shooting down the planes in enough time. I happen to think that we don't need to go this far. We've got an election in a month that we can kick out George Bush that way. We can simply argue his incompetence. But it is an interesting question. It's an interesting theory, and it's one that we're exploring. And, of course, we can explore with your calls as well. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Jimmy Walter. What's your first name? Where are you from? Caller?
Is it me that you're talking to?
It is you I'm talking to.
Okay. My name is Dave, and I'm the Dave that you spoke of earlier. I had emailed you earlier and spoken with you before.
Yes.
I'm out in California. And, Jimmy, I appreciate what you're doing. I think maybe you cannot conclusively arrive at who done it, but as a certainty you can arrive at who helped cover it up and who it could not have happened without their assistance. That is to say, if it took the White House pretty much to give a stand down order that all the Air Force and Marine fighter jets were to stay on the ground while this was going on. You pointed out that they could, in any normal circumstance, be up circling the plane within 15 minutes. They were having as much warning as they had. They would have been on top-level alert unless they were ordered to stand down. That would be a fighter jet rolling within a minute of a plane being hijacked or suspected of hijacked.
So, Dave, what's your theory?
Well, I understand that Mr. Bush was told by his crowd there, the PNAC group that had been planning to invade Iraq, that we had another president who had provoked Pearl Harbor, that he had agitated Japan to a point where Japan had to attack us and did, that President Roosevelt knew it was coming, needed it to happen in order to justify going into Europe and taking on Hitler. So this is a theory. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, see, I've heard all these things, too, and I guess I admit I resist them, and I do it. I don't know why. Maybe because I don't, as much as I detest our current president, think he's
awful and incompetent and corrupt. Indeed, of course, I've talked at length about how he obtained his position corruptly through the Supreme Court. I'm hesitant to go this far, and maybe I need to just open my mind a little, but let me give Jimmy Walter a chance to comment on what you just said.
Well, it's plain to me that what happened was not a direct order to stand down, other than too obvious. These guys had some slicks. What they did was Cheney said, we're going to have war games in the next few days, and what you're going to have to do is find all these hijacked airliners. And then it was like the leprechaun who hid the needle in the haystack. On the day in question, four real hijackings were hid among 20-plus others, and the eight F-16s, that's four sets of two, was going hither and thither trying to find the real hijackers and never made it. So rather than give a direct order to stand down, they set up this impossible maze and probably stacked the deck there so that it would have been impossible for them to find the real hijacked aircraft.
I should note that, I've certainly studied this issue at length. I haven't heard the war games theory before. It's quite interesting, and that Mr. Walter, in fact, has already added to the blog a link where we can all check out and see.
Well, that's not the best one, but that'll get you started, and I'm working on getting a better link for you.
Okay, let me see. Dave, do you have anything else?
Yes, I understand. Now, Mr. Walter, you've been reading the book Inside Job, and I gather you also know Mr. Jim Maher. Talk with him?
Have you talked with Jim Maher?
Have I?
Yes.
I haven't talked with Jim directly. I've talked with his publisher, and I met him, I believe, once, but we are talking to, I met Rupert up in New York City when we had our event up there, and I believe I met him, Mr. Mars, at that event, but we didn't have time to talk. They were in the middle of their event. My event was 2 days later.
He and David A. Griffin are, like yourself, diligently committed to arriving at the facts on this as best they can, and who benefited from it. But I think to finish the point that I was making just a moment ago, if I can still remember where I was at on it, if Bush had been told that a very popular president had done just such a thing and that he himself had been reelected several times and went down in history as a great president, and that that's the message that was put in his ear from his peanut crowd, that would explain it. Also, Jim Maher says he talked to some of the FAA people and some of the pilots that were told, do not respond to this.
Are you aware of that, Jimmy Walter?